Okay, think about this for a second. The sheer guts,
Right.
the incredible bravery it takes to fly straight into danger just to pull someone else out.
It's more than just bravery, though. It's this incredible coordination, split-second timing.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving into today, the Nickel 102 search and rescue mission, Vietnam War. Just intense.
Yeah, we're really going to unpack those 48 hours,
Yeah.
June 20th and 21st, 1972. And it wasn't just one pilot down.
No, that's the crazy part. First, this Navy F-8 guy, call sign Nickel 102.
Right. And then while they're trying to get him, an Air Force pilot, Captain Larry Highfield, call sign Sandy 77, he goes down too.
Unbelievable. And we've got some amazing sources for this, first-hand accounts from the A-1 Skyraider pilots right in the middle of it all.
That's right. First Lieutenant Byron Hookey and First Lieutenant Tim Brady. They were with the 1st Special Operations Squadron flying out of Nakhon Phanom in Thailand.
And Hookie wasn't even supposed to be on this SAR initially, was he? He and his lead were heading somewhere else.
Yeah, they got diverted towards Da Nang, and then boom, the call comes in. Everything changes.
So our mission here for this deep dive is really to get inside that chaos, understand the pressure, the decisions, the teamwork needed to even attempt rescuing these two guys from hostile territory.
And that crucial rule about prioritizing the most recently downed pilot, that's key here, because the clock is always ticking. You know, the risk of capture just goes up and up.
Okay, let's start there. The initial focus is Nickel 102, the Navy pilot, east of the Yeshoah Valley.
Correct. That was the primary mission at the start. But then Sandy 77, Captain Highfill, gets hit while he's searching for Nickel 102.
Hit by anti-aircraft fire.
Yeah, a 23 mil battery reportedly. And his wingman, Lieutenant Tim Brady, actually sees him eject.
Wow.
And just like that, the rule kicks in. Priority immediately shifts. Sandy 77 is now the focus because he's the most recent guy on the ground.
Which makes sense logically for survival chances, but man, leaving the other guy potentially waiting longer, that's a tough call.
It's brutal, a stark reality of SAR. You have limited assets and you have to make these agonizing choices in real time.
And right off the bat, they're hitting communication problems. What was that Air Force saying about the guard channel?
Oh, yeah, the sort of half-joking line, guard is simply Navy common.
Meaning.
Well, the guard channel is supposed to be this universal emergency frequency, right? But because the initial SAR for Nickel 102 was Navy heavy,
Ah, so it got clogged up.
completely saturated with Navy radio traffic. So the Air Force guys trying to coordinate for Sandy 77 couldn't get a clear word in. They'd switch frequencies pretty quick.
Okay, so comms are messy, and the weather wasn't helping either, right? Lots of clouds.
Yeah, definitely. Middle of broken clouds around 4,000 feet, cumulus buildups. They had to fly around stuff. It wasn't just the bad guys on the ground. The air itself was challenging.
Which must have made radio contact even harder.
For sure.
Yeah.
And initially, they only had broken contact with Sandy 77. Just
Yeah.
adds to the stress, the uncertainty.
Then Hookie's flight lead has engine trouble. Seriously.
Yep, had to turn back, which left Hookie flying solo.
He said that was unusual.
Very unusual and way more dangerous. No wingman for cover, nobody watching your six.
But he pressed on anyway.
He did. Speaks volumes, doesn't it? The drive to get to Sandy 77 was just that strong.
Okay, so Hookie's alone, comms are iffy. Then he makes a decision. Cross the Yeshoah Valley.
Right. And interestingly, that seems to improve radio contact.
How does that work? Seems like flying into the valley would be worse.
Well, think about line of sight. Sandy 77 was on the eastern slope. By crossing the valley, Hookie likely got a clearer path for the radio signal, maybe getting past some terrain blockage.
Makes sense. And then Sandy 77 actually guides him in.
Yeah, guides him right to his spot on that eastern slope. Huge breakthrough. Now Hookie knows exactly where he is.
Okay, finally, a moment of, oh, nope, ground fire.
Almost immediately. Coming from a bomb crater, believe it or not.
Resourceful enemy.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And Hookie had to react instantly. Use his Su-11 minigun pod, just lay down a burst to shut that down.
All while flying solo. Intense.
Extremely. And the threat wasn't over. Later, flying over the flatlands in the valley, he ran into heavy AAA.
anti-aircraft fire, the serious stuff.
Yep. Had to evade, then turned back into it, firing his LAU-3 rocket pods to try and suppress it. Aggressive tactics, but necessary.
So Hookie's found him, he's fighting off threats, but the rescue helicopters, they're delayed.
They are. Because of that other Sandy pilot, Hookie's original lead with the engine trouble, they had to escort him back safely first.
Ah, right. So one problem creates another delay. It must have been incredibly frustrating.
Absolutely. Knowing Sandy 77 is down there, vulnerable, and you can't get the Jolly Green in yet.
And then night starts falling.
Right.
And they don't have night rescue capability.
Correct. So they make that a very difficult call. They have to put Sandy 77 to bed for the night.
Just leave him there.
Know his location, hope he stays hidden, and plan for a first light rescue. That was the only real option. So Hooky heads back to Da Nang to get ready for the next day.
And meanwhile, what about Nickel 102? What was Lieutenant Brady seeing on that side of things?
Well, Brady mentioned that initially the area around Nickel 102 seemed very quiet.
Okay.
But appearances can be deceiving. They made two attempts to hoist Nickel 102 out with a helicopter. Both times the chopper took small arms fire.
Seriously? So much for quiet.
Exactly. There was even a report the tail gunner got hit on one attempt, so they had to back off.
And Brady and Highfield, this is before Highfield gets shot down. They were low on fuel at this point.
Yeah, low fuel. And then a replacement two ship of Sandy's arrived to take over Watts on Nickel 102.
Okay, so Brady and Highfield are heading out, or trying to, and they decide to jettison their CBU canisters, cluster bomb units, right?
Correct. Standard procedure after dispensing the bomblets, you drop the empty canisters. But as they did...
That's when the heavy AAA opened up.
That's exactly when. Just a routine action, and suddenly they're in a barrage of fire.
And that's when Highfill, Sandy 77, gets hit.
Yeah. Brady sees it happen, sees the plane catch fire, sees Highfill eject.
And Highfill's response on the radio, I don't know, just shock.
Total disorientation. Must have been terrifying for Brady to witness. His lead is gone. Just like that.
And Brady's not out of the woods either. His own plane gets hit in that same burst of fire.
Takes a hit, yeah. He has to put out a mayday call. He's damaged, alone, still in the Al Shao Valley.
How did he get out?
A Nail FAC forward air controller talked him out, guided him out of the valley. Critical save right there.
Wow. So Brady makes it back to Da Nang, damaged but alive. But what a day. Just unbelievable.
End of day one.
Yeah.
Two pilots down in enemy territory.
Yeah.
The debriefing back at Da Nang must have been intense.
Planning for the next morning. A four-ship rescue attempt.
Right. Prioritizing Sandy 77 because he'd been on the ground less time. Standard procedure, more chance of rescue before capture.
And they had specific roles planned out.
Yeah, logical division.
Yeah.
Hooky and Brady would lead the effort for Sandy 77 since they'd seen his location most recently.
Okay.
And then Captain Red Clevenger and Lieutenant Tex Brown, who had worked Nickel 102's area earlier, they'd focus on him afterwards.
And Hooky was the only one who'd actually seen both pilots' locations.
That's right, which put a huge amount of responsibility on him for the next day's plan. He was the linchpin, really.
And they were planning this late into the night.
Yeah, finished around midnight local time at Da Nang, just grinding it out.
You also mentioned Lieutenant Pete Brennan, the Nail FAC. He was involved both days and was friends with Hooky.
Yeah, Pete Brennan, airborne both days, providing that crucial FAC perspective. And yes, a personal friend of Hookie's adds another layer, doesn't it? That personal connection amid the chaos.
Okay, day two, June 21st. They're ready to go at first light, but there's a conflict with command.
Right. King, the airborne command post, the ABCCC, apparently wanted them to launch separately.
But they didn't.
Nope. They decided, you know, boots on the ground assessment, basically. They launched together as a four ship anyway. More firepower. Better situational awareness right off the bat.
A bit of a bold move, maybe, going against King's direction.
Perhaps, but they clearly felt it was the right tactical call, given the urgency.
And they launch about an hour after sunrise and immediately make contact.
Pretty much straight away. Contact Nail 4-3, another FAC who'd been airborne since before sunrise, working the area.
And he'd already talked to Sandy 77.
Yes, huge relief.
Yeah.
And Nail 4-3 had already directed some airstrikes into the valley near Sandy 77 spot, trying to sanitize the area a bit.
Okay, so the stage is set for the first rescue attempt, Sandy 77. Jolly Green helicopters are positioning.
Yeah, near the Wei Fubai airfield, ready to go in. Hooky brings Brady in first.
Why Brady first?
To get that visual confirmation again. Yep, that's him right there. Reestablish exactly where Sandy 77 is.
But there's still ground fire.
Oh, yeah. Sandy 77 actually reports it as they're approaching.
Hmm.
So you have to sanitize the area again.
Constant threat.
Always. They plan a southwesterly approach for the Jolly Green, try to use the terrain, and then Hooky has engine trouble again.
You're kidding. What happened this time?
Ran an external fuel tank dry. Engine just sputters, quits momentarily.
Oh my God, right when they're trying to make the pickup?
Exactly, heart-stopping moment. But he reacts instantly, switches to the main internal tank, engine catches, but overspeeds for a second, recovers. Pure skill and luck, maybe. He said getting over the ridge just ahead was the only option.
Unbelievable. Okay, engine running again. Final approach for the Jolly.
Hooky does a countdown for Sandy 77, tells him when to pop smoke for final location marking. Helicopter comes in.
And the pickup. Smooth.
Almost. The PJ, the pararescueman, has to go down the hoist. Apparently, Sandy 77 got tangled in some cordage or something on the ground.
Ah, okay. But they get him.
Yep. PJ assists. Sandy 77 is hoisted safely aboard. First one is in the bag. Huge relief.
Okay. Massive success. But mission's not done. Still Nickel 102.
Correct. So one helicopter escorts Sandy 77 out towards the coast. The second Jolly Green becomes the pickup bird for Nickel 102.
And the roles shift for the Sandys?
Right. Captain Clevenger takes over as the lead Sandy for this phase. Hooky and Brady become the high Sandys, holding with the helicopter, providing cover from above.
Like an aerial ballet, you said? Heavily armed, though.
Pretty much. Nickel 102 comes up on the radio pretty quickly.
Good sign.
Definitely. They assess the area for new threats, hold the helicopter back while they check things out.
And again, bring Brady in first.
Yeah, Brady had been working that area the day before. He goes in low to confirm Nickel 102's location. It had shifted slightly overnight.
Makes sense. He wouldn't stay in the exact same spot.
Exactly. Then Hooky confirms the visual, using terrain features he recognizes, even though he hadn't seen Nickel 102 himself the day before. Just incredible airmanship.
And then that daisy chain formation for the actual pickup.
Right. Circling, taking turns, making passes to provide continuous cover while the Jolly Green hovers. Classic protective pattern.
But Hooky mentioned being uncomfortable because he was out of ammo by then.
Yeah, low fuel too by this point. Making attack passes, basically dry runs with no ordnance left.
Yeah.
That's got to be nerve-wracking. You're just a target if someone decides to shoot.
But it worked. They got Nickel 102.
They did. Second successful pickup. Might have just used the penetrator, the weighted cable, rather than the full basket or harness. But he was aboard.
Two for two. The jubilation must have been incredible.
Absolutely off the charts. Two pilots rescued from deep in enemy territory against significant odds. An amazing achievement.
But there's always a but, isn't there? Brady's plane.
Right. The battle damage from the day before finally catches up with him. Flight controls get really stiff, unresponsive, maybe a damaged hydraulic line.
So he has to declare an emergency.
Yep. Jettisons remaining ordnance, external tanks, everything he can to lighten the load, and calls the emergency. Makes a barrier arrestment landing back at Da Nang.
Cable across the runway.
Exactly. Catches the hook on his plane. Hooky and the others had to hold while he got down safely. Tense final moments.
And then the scene on the ramp. Both rescued pilots there. Safe.
Must have been incredibly emotional. Seeing both the Navy pilot, Nickel 102, and their own squadron mate, Sandy 77, back on solid ground.
And that story about Nickel 102 wanting to thank the flight lady?
Yeah. Thinking the SAR lead must have been some senior officer, maybe even female pilot, and being surprised it was just a first lieutenant, Hooky.
It really drives home how young these guys were, carrying this massive responsibility.
It absolutely does. This whole complex, incredibly dangerous mission run by junior officers. Their training, their skill, their courage. Just remarkable.
And you mentioned Hooky contrasting the success with a previous mission where they lost a pilot.
Yes, he'd been a wingman on a mission where the pilot was killed. It puts the elation of these successful rescues into perspective. They knew the risks intimately. The joy was real, but so was the memory of loss.
This whole Nickel 102 mission,
yeah,
it's just an incredible story of skill, bravery, and sheer adaptability under fire.
It really highlights that balance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Teamwork, following the rules, but also needing that ability to think on your feet, make independent calls when everything's hitting the fan.
And you know, these kinds of experiences, they stick with you. Decades later, the impact is still there.
Absolutely. Which brings us to a final thought for you listening. Think about the psychological weight, the immense burden on these young officers. Life and death decisions constantly.
Yeah.
What does it take inside? What kind of training? What kind of person can operate with that kind of precision and bravery under such extreme, relentless pressure? It really makes you consider the human side of it all, way beyond the hardware and the strategies.